forgive me, atheist community. Before I have potentially sinned, I realized this morning as I was waking up. Dan, I want to throw this at you because this is kind of your wheelhouse.
All right.
But, okay, you know how people on social media often fall for stories that aren't actually true?
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I think if either of you, Dan, or you, Dave, are going to tell me that that has never happened to you...
that would be a lie.
I was going to say, you are not allowed on my show anymore. It has happened to me regularly. My name is Sam Mulvey, and this is my show! Hello, this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number. It's toll-free nationwide. Joining me today is Dan. How are you?
I'm great.
And Dave, hello.
Excellent.
So yeah, I fall for that. You know, I'd say my record right now is about every 4 months something just kind of grabs my eye. Oh, that's cute. And I share it. And I'm like, it's not real. Except for a couple times now. I've read a story generally about this happened most recently with a story about North Korea, where I go, oh, that video's interesting. I wonder if it's true. You know what? I'm going to share it and let somebody else do the work and think they got one over on me, just so I can figure out if it's true or not. Because I don't really feel like doing the research, but I'd like to know if it's real or not. So I share it as if it were real and then wait for somebody to correct me.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best peer review processes. Share something on the internet. You'll find out real fast if it's right or not.
Yeah, is that a sin? I guess that's my question.
I think that's fair.
I think that's crowdsourcing
without them knowing.
Right.
Yeah.
That may fall under a fringe category of trolling.
Okay. It turns out it wasn't. So my detector was in good working order that morning, but it was specifically a video of some British guy apparently translating a North Korean video saying, look at all the Americans eat these birds and snow and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, that is kind of like propaganda that they would do.
Americans definitely eat both birds and snow.
Yes, but not...
Or was that considered to be like the entirety of the American diet?
Yeah, like that's all we had.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm like, I have a feeling this isn't accurate, but it was morning and I was kind of... So I just shared it, like 5 minutes, not true. I'm like, yes! Uh-uh.
I feel like North Korea is the platonic ideal of Poe's Law.
Yes.
Possibly.
You cannot tell the difference between a real story out of North Korea and someone mocking a story out of North Korea.
Yeah, but I feel like at the end of it, it's like, wow, that was not a good thing of me. But then I thought about it. I found out if something was true, somebody else got to feel like they're, you know,
got that, nice
that they're
superior,
smarter than I am. Nice. Everybody wins.
So your sloth did some good for the universe.
Hey!
Hey!
Yeah! Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Take that, Bible.
Maybe that's what I should just call my show. Take that, Bible. Oh, boy. So it's been a very interesting week here in Washington State. As you may or may not know, yesterday, you know how I am with time, was the Washington Democratic caucuses. The GOP gets together in May, and they have a caucus and a primary, and then they mash a few buttons and put it in SPSS and figure out who wins. I don't know. It's weird. Having been in primary states and been in caucus states, I much prefer the caucus model because I think it gets people who are normally not involved in local politics involved in local politics, and I think that's interesting to me.
Just for our viewers, the people who are watching their phones and
well, some
right
people
now
might be looking at the waveforms on YouTube.
Okay,
which is a thing we do now.
That's true, which is very cool. You should go check those out.
Yeah.
Nice little clips. But what is the difference between a caucus and a primary?
Well, in a primary, you go into a booth and you press some buttons and that's your vote. And then the party mangles it and covers it in tape and spills coffee on it so they get to vote any way they want. In a caucus, everybody gets in a room, yammers at each other, or the rules are changed so that the party gets to vote in whoever they want.
Hmm.
Do you detect a little bit of...
Undetectable. Your
okay.
Sarcasm
so
is
I did that,
so far under
I did
the radar.
That flat, my opinion is not clear. Right. Okay. That's journalism.
There you go.
So I kind of want to say is I participated in the caucus. Dan, you participated in the caucus.
I did.
I think you went to a game.
No. Okay. I will admit... And I'm bigger on local politics than I am on federal politics.
Yes.
Because honestly, like, my state's going to go for Bernie. I believe Hillary's going to win the nomination nationwide.
Sure, sure.
And Hillary's going to become president because we're not electing Trump. That's just politics
yeah.
aside.
Like, I don't think it's against the editorial policy of Ask an Atheist to be against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I'll just put that out there.
But for me, I'm more interested in my city council, my county council, my, you know, local districts, because that's the place where you can go out and change some people's opinions and actually have a significant impact on the vote, and that's where you weed out the crazies.
Yeah, I know there are some people in the county council who are definitely aware of us.
I really, yeah. Who could really use some weeding out, I should say.
Okay, so what I want to say is that while we all, Dan and I did participate in the Democratic caucus, and
yep.
if you go on social media and look me up at all, you'll know within about 14 milliseconds about where I stand on politics, but I don't want that. I don't want this show to become about the presidential election. I have some other ideas about that somewhere else, also because I would probably want to murder myself by the end of it if I did. But the telling thing here, and this is where I bring Dan into it, is the sheer number of people who are activists or just in the Washington State atheist community who are now delegates to their district or county caucuses.
Yeah, that's right. Myself and yourself included.
Yeah, that's both of us. Mm-hmm. The last time, at last count, looking at Facebook, and we know we haven't gotten everybody yet, we're in the low 20s, actually the mid-20s, mid to high 20s, 25, 26 people
mm-hmm.
who we know in the atheism community who are participating in this election. Now, the reason this is meaningful to me and the reason I want to talk about this is because I've always wanted to do local, basically, I don't want to call it a political action committee, but definitely a political caucus of Washington State atheists. And I never, dealing with the local community, I never thought that there would be enough of a go for that sort of thing. Becky's always wanted to do a legislature day where atheists go down to Tacoma and we talk to, to Olympia, and we talk to local politicians and say, hi. There's a ton of us.
We're not monsters.
We're not monsters. Two, you can't throw us under the bus for cheap heat, as you've all been doing for, I don't know, the entirety of the existence of the state of Washington. I mean, even like Democratic Representative Derek Kilmer he's against humanist chaplains in the military and voted against it. And I called him on it, and I got a pretty, I'll be nice and call it completely patronizing response from one of his letter writers.
A condescending politician? No.
Yeah, that never happens. And that's what happens when we are, as we are now, disorganized. And just the sheer number of people, and I kind of want to get your opinion on this, guys, of people who are now involved in the political process in a organized way that we weren't before, because we're all kind of caucusing for the same candidate. I'll just put it out there.
Yeah.
I think it might be steam engine time. I think it might be time for political activism by atheists and humanists in a large organized fashion in the state of Washington.
I'm into that.
Okay. I don't know. Dave?
I like it. I do.
Really? Okay. I'm surprised.
Here's the thing. I am too cynical for this.
Right.
I want to believe in the power of the combined forces of, you know, the Voltron atheist of Washington getting together.
Can I be Pidge? Can I please be Pidge?
Yes.
But
because it's got to be somebody who completely annoys me, doesn't it?
Hey! Bang!
I want to talk about Voltron sometime.
He's just punishing you. Hey,
your puns are weak.
I know. Anyway, so, like, I want to believe that this would work, and I love the idea of doing it, whether or not it would work or not, but I'm so cynical about the entire process. I stopped talking about politics with people. It stopped being fun. It stopped being interesting.
I've decided after having really unfulfilling and kind of anger-inducing and rage-inducing and depression-inducing conversations about politics in social media on the national level, I have not been on social media save for the purposes of business in about 3 weeks.
Right.
I'm leveling with you.
Yeah.
But state, as you point out, state politics are a different animal.
They are. They
where
are.
We may not be, we may not be huge political movers and shakers on the national stage, and we might be decades away from that. Here in Washington State, I mean, Washington State is one of the least religious states in the union. I think Oregon
number four.
But they're all so closely together, they just dance around each other like some sort of statistic fandango.
I think New Hampshire and Vermont are the two on the top, and then,
Oregon, I think Washington. I think right now the numbers are Vermont, Washington, New Hampshire, Oregon. I think that's it, but it's always like right. that. And what it basically amounts to is somewhere between one in four or one in five people in the state professing no religion. That doesn't mean they're against, you know, we've done the numbers on this millions of times. It doesn't mean they're necessarily against, they're necessarily humanists or atheists or right. skeptics
they're
or
not.
Anything like that.
They're nuns.
Yeah. They're nuns, but they generally tend
they're
to...
They're not nuns, but...
they might be.
That's true. You could have a nun nun.
Hey,
yeah.
Mother Teresa.
That would be a great blog. Nun nun.
None, none.
Mother Teresa.
None, 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 none.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mother Teresa admitted in her journals that she was an atheist.
She did?
Before death. You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, yeah. She admitted that she lost her faith in God years ago.
That makes us all look bad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's not good for us.
I don't know. There is certainly some issues, but at the same time, think of the power of the fact that we're going to have an atheist saint actually canonized by the Vatican. An atheist canonized. How cool is
that?
How
did that not make it make it out of her trial at the Vatican?
I have I no idea.
Yeah, Christopher Hitchens. Get on the ball. Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah, I just made myself sad. Except I didn't, because local politics are a very different animal. We've definitely interfaced with it. And while we didn't win, and this is sort of the point that I want to get to, is that if we do this, if as a community in Washington State we decide to do this, victory in our stated goals is not always what's absolutely required.
Mm-hmm.
I have now participated in two fights in Pierce County and in Clark County in Washington about the really ridiculous In God We Trust plaques. And I've lost both.
Right.
But...
Well, half loss in the Pierce County.
Half loss in the Pierce County. Yeah, I guess I'll accept that. But at this point, it wasn't so much that... it wasn't the fight itself, but it was the whole situation, our interface with the press, our interface with individuals, the conversation that was going around with it, saying where everybody got an earful of us saying, look, we don't want you to not be religious, we just want to be able to participate in the political process. And what you're basically saying is that only Christian patriots are actually Americans and get to participate in the process. And you've got people right behind you who are saying precisely that. And you're calling them your constituents and us not.
Right.
And that argument had sway with swaths of population that you would not expect it to have.
And especially on the local level, I don't know if I've told this story on the show before, but my mother is the one who taught me about the importance of local politics. I grew up in a small town called Gig Harbor.
Yeah.
And there was a...
You can see it.
Yeah,
from my house.
It's right over there. There is a mayoral race. I want to say mayoral race, and my mom's friend was running, and so my mom went door to door campaigning. She says that she believes she changed 60 people's opinion as she went door to door.
Right.
The woman won by 12 votes.
Okay.
So there you go. That is political action.
Right.
Look, it works.
It absolutely works. Yeah. So on the local level, you can have such a larger effect. Like, it doesn't matter how many people I convince for Bernie over Trump or Hillary over Cruz or whatever.
Yeah.
The fact
Herman
is,
supreme over the universe.
You know, it's such an infinitesimally small number of votes that's not really going to matter.
Right.
But in the local level, you can make that impact. And so if we do create some sort of political action group working on the local level, I feel much more confident in their ability to affect real change.
Yeah. And, you know, I do believe in accuracy, and I think it would be accurate to say that there is definitely a progressive streak in the atheism and humanism communities.
Mm-hmm.
I am definitely no exception to that rule. But
which is not to say there isn't also a libertarian variant and or their opinions.
Yeah, there's
are
a libertarian streak in my head. I mean, I'm not even I won't even pretend. But
you're such a Randian.
Oh my, yeah. My favorite book is Anthem.
I think part of the reason that we have, you know, sort of a progressive bent in atheism is that a lot of regressive policies that we are able to just use our sort of natural morals to say these are cruel, these are outdated ideals, this is no way to treat a human being. A lot of those things come from religious texts and are enforced by religious people. And since we don't have that constraint as atheists, we can look at an idea like equal rights for women and say,
yeah,
they're people. They deserve equal rights like everyone else. And there's no intrusion of biblical verses saying, well, actually, you know, there are these stipulations about a woman's role in society.
And we have, precisely. But we also have people in Washington State who are becoming increasingly loud and active in national politics. In the case of the original motto project and Robert Ray, I can't imagine, you know, and I know he does have a definite local focus as well for politics. And so, like I said, I think I will level with you. I got really tired of local atheism community stuff for a while and just sort of retreated to the radio. I wanted to report on what was going on. I wanted to help build the community, but being an activist in the community didn't seem to be working as well as finding people who were much better at than I was at it and telling everybody about, look at this really cool guy over here. Look what Erica with Seattle Atheist is doing and da da da. And that was the kind of, and that's when I really felt like I was doing the most service to the community that I could. And so I'm sort of taking that opportunity that the show has given me and saying, hey, look, guys, we are active in politics. We're just not organized, and we're not talking to each other the way we should be. And it may be time to start approaching this in a systematic way and making the voice of the irreligious heard in Washington State in a way that it hasn't before. And I do not just mean Puget Sound. You've got, Jennifer Goulet on the east side. You've got, for his first name, but Harvey down in Clark County. You've got people all over the state doing this. This is not just godless Western Washington. This is a statewide effort now. Mm-hmm. It's a statewide effort. It's just not an organized effort. And I think it's time. And honestly, if this movement is going to work, we need the whole state. We can't.
Right.
There is sort of a. You have this huge natural divide, which just in the middle of the state, which tends to create some problems in organization.
Yeah.
Or ideology. But
for those listeners who are not familiar with the state of Washington, that is the Cascade Mountain Range.
Yeah.
It's very sharp and very high and very wide.
yeah. Very pointy. Has some volcanoes in it.
And it's very red on one side and very blue on the other.
And so to me, this was today. Yesterday was a big wake-up call to me, both for my personal politics, but also for the politics of the movement of which I have identified with for the last 5 or 6 years, and the social movement that I've been now studying through the medium of radio for 300 episodes, as this is the 300th episode.
Yay!
This is the 300th episode?
This is officially the 300th episode. It's not the 300th episode party.
Right.
But this is the 300th one I've recorded.
Check your local listings. We will be doing that soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
this is madness.
And yesterday, not just in the number of people who participated, but the number of people who, you know, like, I don't agree, but I'm glad you're doing this. We need more atheists in the political process. Yes, we're there. I think it's time. And, okay, now I've voiced my opinion. That's really easy to do when you have this whole radio show gig going.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what the next steps are. I've usually looked to other people to direct me. And this is me talking to, well, you guys in the room, of course.
Do we have a political party? Do we have Atheists of Washington political party or something?
I don't think it would be a political
Facebook
party. I think
or...
it would be a political, it would be some sort of political
movement.
Movement, yeah. But those of you who listen to the show in Washington State, I'm actually asking you guys for, one, is this even doable? And two, how? Because I certainly don't know how. I can plug a microphone into a computer and yammer. I mean, I definitely have that down. Sometimes I can fix a laptop. Sometimes.
We'll see. We'll see.
As Dan gets a little worried because we're fixing his laptop, but, you know, during the show. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. And when I come back, I have a quick story about yesterday that I didn't get to, which I thought was fairly amazing. And then we will get into some news.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show on the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Yeah, his name's Brian Harvey. I keep forgetting. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're talking about the big day in politics here in Washington yesterday. And the one story that I didn't tell that I'd really like to tell, of the eight that I have, is the Pledge of Allegiance in my district. Well, in my district lives a guy who's known as the Sonics guy or the Save Our Sonics guy. If you do things in Western Washington, you've probably met him.
He'll show up. He's got always wearing a Sonics jersey. He's actually a super cool guy. I've talked to him. He used to come to this trivia night I used to go to.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, and super cool guy.
I think you've run into him a couple of times.
Chris, I want to say his name.
Chris Brannon.
Chris.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I know him fairly well. Seen him in comedy because he did stand up and friend of a friend of the show. But if
you're the Twitter type, @SonicsGuy.
@SonicsGuy, that's it. So one of the local politicians was running our district, and he figured, well, we've got this famous guy who's helping out. We'll have him do the Pledge of Allegiance. And so he did the Pledge of Allegiance, and he goes, blah, 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 da, 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 da. One nation, da, 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 indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And the crowd loved it. They ate it up. And there was no booing, you shouldn't have done that. Everybody just sort of went with it. And you could say, well, it was the Democratic caucus. It would be very different in the Republican room.
Just
probably, yeah.
Yes, except that religion is not limited. We like to think that the GOP is the party run by Christianity, run by evangelicals. But that's not necessarily true. There's plenty of religion in the Democratic Party. Every time, I mean, I've seen in Seattle political races when things were down in their dumps, I've seen Democrats throw irreligious people under the bus just as quickly.
I think that's absolutely true. But at the same time, I would say evangelicals are primarily Republican, and I feel like
I would say certain flavor. I would say it depends on your flavor, because let's not forget who the politician was who really brought evangelical Christianity to the fore in American politics.
Who's that?
Carter.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, he was the one who really pushed his Baptist faith as a presidential candidate, and that kind of got the doors opened.
But I feel like the Republican side is more the side that you're going to run into people who equate religious belief with patriotism. I don't think Democrats do that as much.
I would only go so far as to say they do it in different ways. I wouldn't say that one side does and the other one doesn't. I at this point, maybe just because of my politics, I've had my patriotism challenged more by Democrats than Republicans.
Right.
Directly. Do I think I'm going to get a hearing at all at a CPAC convention? I'm sure David Silverman would have something to say about that. I'm not saying they're equitable, but I'm saying the pox is upon both houses.
Did you see the segment on Samantha Bee's show, Full Frontal, on David Silverman and Amanda Knieff?
I did not.
At CPAC. It was really good. Worth checking out.
I absolutely will. So we have some news. And I'm going to start on the down stuff, I think, and then go from there. Three Catholic leaders are facing charges for their role in allowing a child abuser to go free. Reverend Giles A. Schinelli, Reverend Robert J. D'Aversa, and Reverend Anthony M. Crisitelli are being charged with criminal conspiracy and endangering the welfare of children in Blair County, Pennsylvania. The three priests put a known pedophile, Brother Stephen Baker, in positions that gave him one-on-one access to the children, which allowed him to abuse over 100 minors. Baker was given jobs such as athletic trainer at a Catholic high school, despite warnings that he should be kept away from kids. Attorney General Kathleen Kane said the church leaders chose to protect the image and reputation of the Franciscan friars instead of the children in their care. Baker committed suicide in 2011.
This coming from the organization that is telling you that they are the moral leaders and have a direct line from God to tell you how to lead a good life.
So they knew that this person was a potential child molester or a certain child molester.
Yes. Yeah.
And put him in these positions anyway?
Yes. Yeah.
Now what I want to know is why. Did they have no one else that could possibly fill these positions, and it was just like, well, we got nobody, we're just gonna have to put this guy there and hope that, you know, he's recovered? Or is this something where they're like, it's fine, we'll just, you know?
Yeah.
Because when you have warnings that the person should be kept away from kids and you put them there anyway, I mean, it definitely makes you culpable. Here they're being charged.
Right.
But what is the possible motivation? Why would you do you just like the idea of kids getting raped, and that's why you want to put somebody in this position? Why would you do that? I don't often lose my temper on the air, but for God,
did they forget? I mean, literally, that's what I'm stuck with. I can't imagine somebody in a meeting over coffee and crucifix-shaped donuts or something like that going,
hot cross buns. Okay, I'm better now.
Going, well, we don't really have anybody to run the parochial school's athletics department. You know, there's this guy we've heard about, but he's good with kids and has a clown suit. I can't imagine that was actually the thought. I can't believe that was what they were thinking. But then the question comes, how do you forget something like this?
Right.
Don't put him with kids. He might potentially or already has done bad things with them. Don't put him with kids. And they just, that got filed under stuff we don't care about.
Right.
You know, beneath the thing with Beware the Leather.
So it makes me wonder, either they're so far removed from the idea that a person, you know, can have bad qualities, or they're so far removed from the idea that the molestation or rape of children is a crime. And I don't know which of these ideas they must have had to settle at some point, and either consciously or subconsciously, committee or individually, gone with this idea that it's going to be okay.
Right.
It's not that big a deal. Well, it's a big deal.
100 100 injured kids, 100 hurt children.
This is something I was trying to look up. I'm trying to find, but it's not getting there. But in this article, it makes it clear, we don't know how many kids were victimized by Stephen Baker, but there was one guy who says he was given access which allowed him to victimize hundreds, plural.
Okay, so hundreds of potential victims.
Hundreds.
Dead monk. Image is looking great there. Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Franciscan monks. Fantastic. Would like to move on. A Texas judge, because honestly, I'll just get sadder. a Texas judge has been punished for sentencing a man to write Bible verses for misdemeanor assault. Judge Randall Rogers gave a man probation for getting into a fight with his girlfriend's ex. Their probation sentence included copying a Bible verse 25 times a day, marrying his girlfriend within the and marrying his girlfriend within the month. The Texas State Commission on Judicial Conduct investigated Rogers after a complaint from the Freedom from Religion Foundation. In a letter to the FFRF, the commission stated that Rogers was subject to private sanction from the commission, the details of which were not available to the public. All right, so he's ordered to write Bible verses. Questionable legality there.
I don't think it's questionably legal.
I'm being nice. No, it completely not legal. Yeah. But I don't know if that's really what we should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
He's been ordered to marry his girlfriend.
Right.
Anybody ask the girlfriend? I don't, like, it sounds like, if this kind of knob, he may not be getting sentenced. She may be the one getting sentenced.
This is right. True.
And they both end up institutionalized.
Hey!
And from what I understand, he did it. He actually married her.
So this actually...
I'd like to assume that she said yes, but it was a court order.
How do you tell that to the kids? Yeah. Romantic story of how a judge ordered you to marry each other.
Get together? Well, when he was a defendant for the fifth time.
Tell me again how you met. How you and Mom met. No, so this actually happens to a family member of mine.
Oh,
really?
Not this particular story. And you know, the story I'm about to tell occurs, I think, about 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They had a charge which would have resulted in a felony sentence,
mm-hmm.
and the judge gave them three choices, which was to go to prison, join the army, or marry the girlfriend and go to a specific church. And they married the girlfriend and went to a specific church.
That is so illegal.
It has been fairly common in local jurisprudence.
I don't even understand, like, that is specifically, like, we have a lot of discussion about the way the First Amendment applies to the government promotion of religion.
Yeah.
But a judge telling you to go to a specific church, there's no question, that's not fringes, that's not gray area, that is exactly what they were talking about.
Right.
This is why a lot of religious conservatives say that we're trying to change the nature of the United States with our complaints about them breaking the law, is because for the last 250 some years, they've been the law, as far as the First Amendment goes, has been regularly broken with impunity in this country because nobody was watching, and perhaps nobody was able to see because we didn't have modern media. People weren't aware of their rights because the general educational level in this country has always been very variable, very variable, whatever. For example, me. But so what we end up having is a situation where you have inadequate education, inadequate understanding of one's rights, no way to really get the word out that one's rights are being violated. So you have for 100 and some years judges who are saying, yeah, you have to go to church, you have to do this, praise Jesus or die by fire.
Right.
And now, you know, it's the 21st century and we can see all this stuff now. We're like, hey, what country is this? And the answer is America. It's like, well, no,
boom,
not
America.
Not really. You know, we have these laws. It's not your, you know, your fault that you don't understand them. You can't do it anymore. And now the nature of the nation is being changed. I've never shied away from the fact that I really would like, you know, the United States to be different.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to this. But I'm not saying there should be different laws. I'm saying we should respect the laws that we already have.
Yeah, and it's the old argument from tradition. Well, you've never complained about it before, therefore that means it's legal. How long can something be illegal until it becomes legal just because it hasn't been challenged?
Right.
Like, the answer is there is no amount of time. Tell a cop that you get pulled over for speeding going 80 in a 60. Tell a cop you've been driving 80 down this street for 40 years. He's going to say, cute, thanks, here's a ticket.
Like, right.
It's still illegal just because you've gotten away with it. Interesting aside on the story, as far as the judge's order for the Bible verse, he didn't even pick like a super Jesus-y Bible verse.
Do we know which one he picked?
Yeah, he picked Proverbs 26:27. If a man digs a pit, he will fall into it. Like,
if the gloves don't fit,
you must acquit.
Like you could have changed a couple words and dropped the actual verse, and I wouldn't even have thought of this as being illegal. Just write this down over and over. Yeah. Stop being an idiot. Stop being an idiot. Stop being an idiot. Write that 25 times a day.
Yeah, right.
Outside of the context of it explicitly being a Bible verse, I have no opposition whatsoever for sentencing a minor criminal to be writing, you made this mess, you have to clean it up, sort of verse.
Stop being a knob over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe if they read it enough times.
It does. That's the thing. If it weren't for the fact that this was a violation of a person's rights, it seems fairly humane.
Yeah, it's not.
I'm not calling this Judge Pol Pot here.
Except for the girlfriend.
Yeah,
Briefly forgot.
That's where it gets messed up.
Yeah.
But the writing lines for getting in a fight, that seems like a perfectly acceptable punishment.
That part seems pretty good. marry your girlfriend. I assume she says okay.
Do you think he refers to her as his ball and chain, court ordered?
It's nice to have somebody picking up the slack.
A Seattle man is paying millions in restitution over a pay-for-prayer website and other scams. Benjamin Rogovi, did I get that right?
Yes.
Awesome. We used to fake testimonials and stock photos in his website to convince people to sign up for repeat charges on their credit cards. Rogovi also had a site for people to pay to settle consumer disputes and an online ordination service. All three sites were shut down by the Washington State Attorney General's office, and Rogovi agreed to refund $7.8 million to his customers. AG Bob Ferguson told reporters that he believed in the power of prayer, but was shocked that someone would capitalize on people's need for spiritual support, given that Attorney General Bob Ferguson has only been on Earth for 27 minutes.
Can we get the Attorney General's actual... what specifically does he say here? Because I think we read it over before the show, and it was so astoundingly naive.
Okay,
just was like, how did you get to be an attorney?
Yeah, you're a lawyer, right? You went to law school. This should not be surprising.
It's like a mechanic showing up and going, what's metal?
Okay, the original quote, as according to ComoNews.com, I believe in the power of prayer. I do. I believe in that. But to capitalize on that, right? The yearning for support, that spiritual support, to take advantage of that in a deceptive way, how low could you go? To which I say, here is the Twitter account for one Joel Osteen.
I do not understand how, this is America. We have phrases like snake oil salesman.
Yes.
You know, we have the burned out district. Like, this is, and I'm not like some sort of like crazy super historian. I'm a historian in absolutely no way. I just read a little bit. Probably less than a lawyer does.
One would hope.
Yeah. It's like, seriously, this is a surprise to you?
Well,
people can profit off of religions? Well, that's terrible.
And one of these...
Welcome to Mayberry, Attorney General.
And one of these websites that got shut down is an ordination service. You pay a fee and you get ordained. I'm sure that's completely legal. Like, I'm sure someone with one of those ordinations can do weddings, can do funerals, can do other, you know, state-sanctioned ceremonies. Because why not?
Why not, indeed?
How is that different than dudism?
Well, you are getting sort of a raw deal, because there's a number of websites with a longer history than this guy who will do ordination for free.
That's true.
I mean, I should know.
Yeah.
I've been a...
How many do you have?
Just the one.
Just the one.
I've had it since 1996, so...
Me too.
Yeah.
It lets you do, you know, unless you live in a state with really silly laws about who and who, you know, who can actually be a religious leader.
And if you do, please contact the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org.
Yeah. Hey, looking at this news list, they seem to be on the ball this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they'll do it for free. You get a bad idea. But yeah, pay for prayer. I guess my question, something to think about before we come back from the break, is that actually... It's clearly illegal. I just wonder why. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Going to break. When we come back, Dan's going to say some stuff at us for science.
Billy! Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 bajillion in your locker.
Wow! $1 bajillion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. So in the break, I was actually looking up Ferguson on Wikipedia, and it turns out that he received a grant to provide legal assistance to the Yaqui tribe in Guadalupe, Arizona, where he lived there and assisted the community on various legal needs. Having lived in Arizona and near Guadalupe, in fact, he has to know.
He has to know.
This is just political positioning, I'm assuming.
It's either political positioning or his cognitive dissonance is so... It's a superpower.
yeah, jeez. Because that's... Guadalupe is an interesting village in that it's sort of lodged between Tempe and Phoenix, which have been growing like amoeba, but it won't touch this area because poor people. And yeah, it's really one of the not nicer things about the area. So I'd like to thank David from the internet, Josh from Bonnie Lake, Jonathan from Utah, and Rich from Kent Actual in the UK for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the listener by Peggy from local Kent, who listeners of Ask an Atheist, to help us keep the lights on here. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you right there. Leads me directly into an email that we received today very quickly. This is CM from Washington, who writes, how are theism and podcast commercials similar? A, both are a complete waste of my time. I'd like to continue listening to your podcast, but will not continue to run for my phone every time a commercial airs. Please let me know if a link to a commercial-free version is available, or please let me know if you decide to do this in the future. Also, placing commercials at the beginning or end so as to be easily skipped would also be acceptable. Tell you what, CM, drop me a check for 4K, and I'll get that done for 4 months.
I'm not sure it's clear to some of our listeners where the money comes from that we use to produce this show.
Yeah, we're not a podcast, we're a radio show. We air on KKNW here in Seattle, and the commercials we run, they give us money and they let us run the show. So a show with no commercials would also not be a show. And if I put them in the beginning and the end where you could skip them, people wouldn't...
Our advertisers.
Yeah, advertisers wouldn't pay for them because nobody would listen to them. Therefore, I wouldn't have any money to put on a show. Do I sound patronizing enough to you yet?
It amazes me that CM doesn't seem to understand the way that entertainment is funded for the last 100 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Longer. I mean, look at printing presses for periodicals. Yeah.
The idea, like, there is still broadcast television. You can just plug your TV in, and there are channels you can get for free that are paid for by ads. You can go to the radio, turn it on, and there's radio music for you or talk and everything. That's free because it's paid for by ads. You can go on the internet. There's tons of free content that is there paid for by ads. So what I'm saying is buy ads.
Subliminal advertising. Hey. You know, I get this a lot, is like, why do you have commercials on your podcast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm usually a little nicer than this, but this is honestly the most this is insulting.
Yeah that, like, was kind of a nasty intonation.
Yeah. So
sorry if we're losing a listener here, but you started
I'm not,
it, bud.
I'm not sorry. There's the door. You're welcome to it. However, and just as I make everybody run screaming from the building, Dan has a special, a special version of Four Science this week.
That's right. Today is the Four Science Easter special, and it's all about resurrection. The idea of resurrection, the dead returning to life, has been an integral part of many of the world's mythologies and even modern comic book characters, cartoons, and other media. But is such a thing actually really possible? Can the dead return to life in the real natural world? Well, as it turns out, kind of. The wood frog is a species of amphibian found in Alaska, Canada, the northeastern United States, and in a few places in the Rocky Mountains. Throughout their habitat, winters can be extremely harsh and cold. As winter approaches and temperatures begin to near freezing, a wood frog will take refuge in the leaf litter of the forest floor and begin to store urea, which is normally excreted in waste, in their tissues. In the frog's liver, glycogen is converted to the sugar glucose and is distributed throughout the body. The combined effects of glucose and urea act as an antifreeze, limiting the size of ice crystal formations in the frog's tissues and helping to protect its cells from being damaged by freezing. This allows the frog to freeze almost completely, with its blood, muscle, tissues, and even the lenses of its eyes and its brain frozen solid. As temperatures rise in the spring, the wood frog begins to thaw out. The blood starts flowing again, and the frog becomes active again, searching for food and a mate. While many resurrection myths involve the dead returning to life after a few hours or even a few days, the wood frog can resurrect from a block of ice after several months. But when it comes to staying dead for a long time and then returning to life, it's hard to match the nearly indestructible tardigrade. Tardigrades, or water bears, or moss piglets, if you like, are a distinct phylum of animals that outnumber humans by orders of magnitude, but that most people will never see. Water bears are quite small, most less than a millimeter in length. They're kind of caterpillar-shaped, with four pairs of clawed limbs and a charmingly wrinkly face. Tardigrades are certainly tiny and even a little bit cute, but they are formidable. These survivors have a lineage going back at least 530 million years. They live pretty much anywhere there's liquid water, on every continent and in every region on Earth, and they've been found in mountainous regions as high as 20,000 feet and in the oceans as deep as 13,000 feet. But what really sets them apart is their ability to survive conditions that would kill almost anything else. Tardigrades are able to withstand freezing temperatures as low as 1 degree Kelvin. For you non-physics majors, that is minus 458 degrees Fahrenheit. And they can withstand extreme heats as high as 420 degrees Kelvin or 300 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 150% of boiling. They can resist pressures six times greater than that found in the Challenger Deep, the deepest of our ocean trenches. And as experimental passengers on the Shuttle Endeavour in 2011, they've even survived the vacuum of space. They can also be irradiated with hundreds of times the human lethal dose of ionizing radiation with no ill effects. And these aquatic organisms can even be dried out completely, desiccated, for as long as 30 years and still return to life when returned to water. When it comes to resurrection, tardigrades can return to life after being dead 3,650 times longer than the average messiah. But one organism has an even greater record for resurrection after a period of non-life. In 2007, researchers from Rutgers University extracted glacial ice from 5 meters deep in the Beacon and Mullins valleys of Antarctica. Like sedimentary rocks, glacial ice deposits slowly over time, and the deepest of their samples was approximately 8 million years old. There in the ancient glacial ice, researchers found bacteria, frozen solid for 8,000 millennia. When put on nutrient plates, the bacteria revived and began reproducing. Amazing as that is, it's not actually our winner just yet. Because in the year 2000, researchers from Westchester University in Pennsylvania were exploring the Salado Salt Formation in Carlsbad, New Mexico. There, they found bacteria that had been preserved in inclusions in the salt crystals for 250 million years, since long before the time of dinosaurs. And yet, when placed in nutrient auger, these Permian-era bacteria returned to life. Named Bacillus permians to denote the geological era they came from, they were a totally unknown species to science, brought back to life after sleeping in death 30.4 billion times as long as certain more famous resurrected cave dwellers. So this Easter, as spring returns, the frost thaws, and new life pushes up through the ground, I hope you'll ponder the masters of earthly resurrection and maybe pour one out for our desiccated homies. To revive them!
If you have a scientific question or topic that you'd like to hear about on the radio or podcast, phone in at 844-753-7842 or go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red candy-like button, ask your question, and Dan might answer it. For science.
Science.
Yeah.
A little more snark than usual in there.
Just wasn't expecting it to go quite that direction, to be honest with you. Do you think there's any chance of the show being resurrected after I insulted people about money? Hey!
Zing!
Yeah.
Well, if you pour enough into it.
So this wood frog species, I remember hearing about this in biology class back in when I was in ninth grade, way back in the 1990s, long time ago. Anyway, I thought I was curious because there is something in their bodies that, the way it was explained to me is ice crystals are sharp.
They are.
And so when something freezes, the ice crystals tend to break cell walls
right.
And permeate.
Yeah, they form sharp points. They stick out in all directions.
And something about this frog dulls those points.
Right. What happens is the urea and the glycogen, the urea and the glucose in the frog act just like antifreeze does in a radiator, in a car's coolant system.
Mm-hmm.
And it prevents large ice crystals from forming. And so even in extreme cold temperatures, instead of the frog's blood becoming one large crystal of sharp points, it becomes a slush that just kind of stays there.
Hmm. And if I remember correctly, they were actually using this as an example of trying research ways to do cryogenics.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There are actually numerous amphibian species that can do this. Mm-hmm. Most of them actually live in North America, which is cool. Most of them are in Canada. The first frog I heard about that could do this is called the Canadian gray tree frog.
Blame Canada.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool sort of adaptation. And you find some stranger ones, too. If you go into the Arctic, there's a species of fish called a glass fish that lives in the above the Arctic Circle. They have a natural antifreeze in their blood, and they can swim around in water that is cold enough to freeze pretty much any other species of fish solid. But also, their living in this cold water, as you probably know, cold waters can hold more dissolved gases. This water holds so much oxygen that this fish doesn't need hemoglobin in its blood to carry oxygen. The oxygen just diffuses right through it from the water.
Wow.
So this fish, called the glassfish, is crystal clear, and its blood is crystal clear, too, having no red pigment.
Hmm.
Interesting. I actually spent a lot of time last week reading about extremophiles, and the fact that there's a creature now that they've discovered, like a one-celled organism, that actually requires an incredibly high salinity level mm-hmm. in order to reproduce, rather than one that's just okay with salt. It's one that actually really needs the salt in order to live.
Right. This is where we make the distinction between a creature like a water bear that can survive extreme conditions versus what we really call an extremophile. And most of what we call extremophiles are archaea, relatives of bacteria. They thrive in inhospitable conditions.
And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave, for writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Twitter us at askanatheistwa. We'll see you guys next week. All right, so you guys good for a second?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it just occurred to me when I was like writing that, and I was like, man, 30 years, that's a long time. Well, that sure beats 3 days. I wonder how much it beats 3 days by.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're done with the show today. There's a lot more news that we thought we should cover.
There's fun stuff. We kind of ended up on the downer ones and then moved on. So.
Yeah, but we had the really cool resurrection thing for Easter, which is the snarkiest for science I think I've ever heard. You kind of nailed that one. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Sam just made Dan's week.
Was that about a battleship?
I think we're tied.
H4.
Yeah. The NFL has suggested that they would refuse to hold a Super Bowl in Atlanta if the state's government passes a discrimination law. Georgia House Bill 757 would protect businesses from charges if they discriminated due to religious beliefs. A similar bill passed in Indiana that led to millions of lost revenue as major corporations boycotted the state. An NFL spokesman told reporters that league policies emphasize tolerance and inclusiveness and suggested that the owners would consider if a state's laws match those policies when considering where to hold a Super Bowl. The NFL previously moved the Super Bowl from Phoenix to Los Angeles in 1992 because of Arizona's refusal to adopt Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
So,
as a sports guy.
Yeah, allow Sports Dave take this over.
Yeah, go for it.
Hi, welcome to Hands-On Football. now, I find this an interesting story because I think this is one of those situations where this may be a purely cynical PR move. The NFL has had some bad press over the last few years for the way they handle injuries, for the way they handle domestic violence. The Michael Sam gay player situation did not work out that well for him and everything.
No.
They needed deflated balls. Tom Brady talking about his balls constantly on the news. That was hilarious.
Okay.
We're in post segment. I could get away.
I missed that part.
Oh yeah, there was a press conference where he would not say football. And I bet it was on purpose. My balls are always blah blah blah. No, the balls are great. It was amazing. But this may be just a PR move. But I'm okay with that. I don't care what the NFL's motivation is if it leads to putting pressure on the South Carolina government to not pass this law. This is a nasty law. It's not just like religious freedom as in you're going to let bakers not make cakes for gay marriage. This is a law that says not South Carolina. Dan, save me there.
Well, South Carolina did recently pass a similar law, did it not? Or was it North Carolina? No, it was North Carolina.
North Carolina. But, yeah, there's a lot of these floating around.
They don't want to unduly incriminate South Carolina.
Right.
Yeah.
But this law basically says that not only can a business turn down customers because of their sincerely held religious beliefs, they can fire people for not holding the same religious beliefs.
Right.
So, like, if you're a Methodist and you have a Baptist boss, he can fire you for being a Methodist because you don't actually meet his standards of belief. That's right. A nasty law. And so the fact that the NFL is going to say, hope you don't want a Super Bowl because that ain't going to happen as long as you got this going on. Even if it is the most cynical PR move, I'm okay with it.
I actually heard that the film crew and production crew of The Walking Dead had also threatened to pull out of filming in Georgia over the same discrimination. It's like, you know what? When you've offended a zombie gore fest, you have probably crossed the line.
Wow.
Oh, and speaking of evil corporations, Disney has announced that if this bill passes, they will not film any movies in Georgia. And boy, Disney are not people who are, like, they're people who are okay with pissing off their own customers.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of those weird things where it's like, okay, this could go one of two ways. Wait, we like money. Money's nice. Never mind. Or, you can't tell us what to do. Go to hell. You know, this could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen states that pass these laws, which are mostly in a certain region of the United States. I've seen it go both ways, where folks go, this is our culture. Leave us alone. Our concept of culture exceeds any rule of law.
Right.
And then you've got other states that say, you know, no, economically, this is just killing us. And then you've got Indiana, which tried to do both. That still confuses me. I don't know what's legal there. I mean, do I have to put a bucket on my head when I go to Indiana now? It's so vague.
Right.
It could be a law about equality, or it could be a law about what sandwich meats are legal. That's how vague it has now become.
Well, and in Georgia, it's particularly important that the NFL's coming in, because right now the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, a guy named Arthur Blank. Have you ever seen Arthur Blank?
No.
He is the most quintessential rich-looking guy you've ever seen. He has a pencil mustache. He wears an ascot. He's like he looks like a rich guy in a really bad movie.
Okay.
He's amazing. He's building a new stadium for the Falcons, and part of the idea of the new stadium is they want to get a Super Bowl, because that's usually when you get a new stadium, the NFL wants to advertise a new stadium. And everything, so they'll usually give you one. So if the NFL is saying, yeah, you know that fancy new stadium? It ain't getting a Super Bowl if this bill passed. That's going to put a lot of pressure. There are a lot of football fans in Georgia.
I was going to ask. I know Atlanta is a big football town, but is football popular in Atlanta?
Yeah, football is huge in Atlanta. It's in the entire state. It's, you know, the South. A lot of high school and college football
right. In
the area as well. But, you know, the NFL definitely bleeds into that. And so, yeah, you're going to see a lot of pressure from sports fans saying, no, you can't.
So this makes for an interesting segue that I was hoping to do on the Four Air episode, which we'll have to do again some other time.
Okay.
But if you are listening to Ask an Atheist and you enjoy the dulcet tones of Dave Brulette, there's a new venue for you.
There is a new venue for me. Me and my wife have started a podcast called Hands Free Football. I think it's well established. I'm the soccer guy.
You are the soccer guy.
I do love me some soccer, and my wife loves her some soccer, and we're season ticket holders for this local soccer team. And so, I want you to give us a chance. Go listen to episode 0. We brought Sam on to basically ask him, how the hell did this happen? Why are we in the studio talking about this?
Yeah, I don't know a thing about. Well, okay, I won't say that I don't know anything about soccer, but
right.
My soccer knowledge is fairly limited, and what I know about it comes from you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about going a little bit into the story that I tell in episode 0 as sort of an enticement to listen, but I'm not going to do that. I'm keeping that from you. I will not tell you. If you want to hear it, you need to go to
handsfreefootball.com. You can also find us on Facebook at our Facebook/handsfreefootball or Twitter at handsfreefooty.
Yeah. And if you don't enjoy my dulcet tones, which I imagine is a large number of people, I'm only on episode 0.
Yeah.
I introduce it, and then they get into the serious stuff, and I really like the way you guys have approached sports, and it's definitely worth a listen, and
yeah,
give it a shot.
Having a lot of fun with it, so
yeah. And it's also recorded here.
It's recorded right here in Waveform Orchard Studios.
Waveform Orchard Studios, which is what we've decided to call it.
As a sports Adventist, I have to say I have not a whole lot of interest in sports. However, if I had to have someone talk to me about sports, it would probably be Dave.
No,
Dave and Carol together. Carol likes me, I think.
Yes, Carol likes you very much.
Kinda hates the show.
She just doesn't. She's an atheist. She's an apatheist. Doesn't want to take part in the community.
If you listen to the show, you know her voice because she's been on a number of commercials, and her talking about I was not ready for the. I'm gonna take the same position her mom did. I was not ready for the language in the show.
Yes, and it is a podcast under the explicit tag on iTunes, which, by the way, it is on iTunes. I want to make that clear. You can find it there.
You can find it at all major podcast.
Not just iTunes. I don't know how to get. I'm working on that, but so far just iTunes.
Just iTunes. Well, yeah, Apple. They gotta go. Is it produced on a Mac? Yes. Well, is it produced on a new Mac? No, I can't afford it.
No podcast for you.
Yeah, I have opinions about Apple.
But if you're not into iTunes, where do you find it?
You can go to the website and listen to each episode there. Handsfreefootball.com.
Okay, so
I'm a shill.
You're a shill. Come on,
we're all shills.
We're all shills. Yeah, you know, we do Ask an Atheist, but you've done a lot of work for the show. So the least I can do is give you a little bit of advertising on your own project.
Do appreciate that.
And we need to congratulate Dan.
Yes,
a little bit.
Oh yeah,
if we can.
Sure,
Dan. Yeah, Dan is no longer a vampire.
No. I gave it up. I'm a black ribboner now. No more blood for me.
I have no idea what any of this means.
There's somebody out there who's going to get that
joke. Okay, great. But I do know what you do now.
Yeah. I teach marine science to kids with a company called Pacific Marine Research. So we do field trips for kids K through 12. We take them out on a boat out on Puget Sound. We teach them a little bit of ecology. We teach them about some of the history of the sound, the animals that live here, food chains, the flow of energy through the system. They get to do some plankton tows and look at plankton under a microscope. They get to do some water quality sampling. And then they get to look at and handle all of these amazing, cool, weird, gross creatures that make Puget Sound their home.
Right on.
Science Dan.
Yeah.
At what point do you teach your students on the proper pronunciation of gooey duck?
You know, we don't actually have any gooey ducks on board, but we have two horse clams, which have probably my favorite alternate common name, the horse clam. It's a very large species of clam, nearly as large as a gooey duck. For those who aren't from the Pacific Northwest, we have really big clams here that live in our sediment. But the horse clam, because the end of its shell that you could consider the top where the siphon comes out sort of makes a hole for that big siphon even when the shell is closed, the horse clam is also called the fat gaper. Which I just love. What a name.
The horse
the
clam.
Fat gaper.
Also known as the fat gaper.
Hand me that fat gaper, would you? Actually, I was teaching class just the other day. And while holding the horse clam and showing the kids and talking about how it's a filter feeder and lives in the sediment and all this, it started squirting. The kids got loud and unruly. And I ended up using the horse clam to hold up the entire class, you know, threatening to squirt them with it if they weren't quiet. And everybody stepped like 4 feet back and got quiet right away. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should make this part of the bit. was so effective.
Just so that we can summarize, if you'd like to hear the dulcet tones of Dave Brulette talk about soccer, you can go to his podcast. If you'd like the dulcet tones of Dan Lombardo threatening your children, where would I send them?
MarineScienceAfloat.org.
Fantastic. So we have a fun story that we didn't get to cover. A Christian group has started with the aim of training teachers to convert students without breaking the law. In an in-depth report by the Washington Post detailed the tactics and philosophy of Christian Educators Association International, a group that considers schools to be in the largest mission field in the country. Finn Larson, executive director of the organization, insists that his group doesn't want teachers to proselytize, but find other ways to express their faith and convert kids to Christianity. The ACLU says that the group encourages teachers to cross the line.
I don't want you to proselytize. I just want you to convert kids to Christianity.
I don't want you to kill gerbils. I just want you to shove this stick into them until it comes out the other side.
I don't want you to learn how to cook. I want you to learn how to mix ingredients and apply heat until you have something that is palatable.
Yeah.
I'm stealing that one from Becky. Full credit to where it goes.
Yeah, she's like,
things from Becky. I just want you to take some of her ideas on the air without credit.
I just want you to repeat what she says without letting anyone know that she said it first.
I don't want you to be on the radio. I just want you to rub this magnet up against the coil really fast.
I don't want to beat this horse to death, but, you know,
repeatedly. Yeah.
That one sounded surprisingly perverse.
Electronics could be pretty sexy if you do it right.
Welcome to Eden Claw, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
things I'd never thought I'd say. What? It's proselytizing?
This
really?
Is an entire group whose whole purpose is to do an end around on the First Amendment, which you can't do an end around on. Anything
right.
you're doing to convert your children to religion is illegal, and therefore you can't do it.
Well,
you could lead by example, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know.
But how do you, if you're leading by example as a teacher, okay, you have a very specific job, which I kind of know because Becky talks about it and won't stop. You have to teach, you have to answer questions for kids, you have to be, on many levels, be a role model for kids on how to succeed in an academic field. You have to counsel the kids in some level. There's a million things involved with being a teacher in interacting with students. I don't know how you lead by example kids to Christianity without mentioning Jesus ever.
Yeah.
I guess that's my point.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that sort of when I was towards the end of my Christian faith, that I had come to the conclusion that it wasn't very effective to try to, like, talk to people about this stuff because,
right.
well, when you actually get in a logical argument about it, you know, with a person who is willing to get into the nitty-gritty and details, you don't have the evidence you're going to lose. But I thought, well, maybe I could get people to, you know, convert to my faith if I was just, like, a really good guy, and they were like, oh, well, you know, that guy's a Christian, and he's a really good guy. Maybe if I want to be a really good guy, I want to be a Christian, too. And that sort of bounced around my head for a while. And then I got a lot more attached to the idea of just being a good guy than being a religious person. I was like, you know what? One of these things is more important than the other one. I'm just going to stick with the being a good guy. And I don't really care if it makes other people want to
right.
be nice to me or each other or anyone else. It's just, you know, it just seems like the thing to do.
Yeah. And it's, I just don't see how they expect to. It's not that teachers aren't allowed to mention religion in classrooms. It's just that they're constrained from talking about religion in specific ways, like saying,
right.
I'm a Christian and you should be one too. I think they can, yeah.
Yeah, or say passing a state law that says you can use the Bible to teach geology and astronomy. I believe we covered that recently.
Well, yeah, we did that story in the very next week. They it was like literature, geology, astronomy, biology, and comparative religion.
Right.
And
they're like, okay.
And then the next week, all the middle ones were taking out, so it was literature and comparative religion. We're like,
which you could already do, so.
Right. Yeah. That's fine.
This is a law that now means nothing. My favorite.
I want to send people to the... I don't really often send people to articles, but this is a really great long-form piece in the Washington Post. Can we put this on the show notes?
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Put this on the show notes.
She talks to the ACLU. She talks to Catherine Stewart, author of The Good News Club, a book that exposes that even an evangelical children's organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a really interesting look into an organization who straight out says, let me give you a quote here because this just blows me away. This the leader of this organization says, we're not talking about proselytizing. That would be illegal. Duh. But we're saying you can do a lot of things. It's a mission field that you fish differently. Like, That's so creepy to me.
What it's really I almost hate to talk about it in these terms because it stands out as an incredibly obvious and exactly what I expect from people who approach religion in this way. This is the religion of Michael Behe. This mm-hmm. is the religion of a lot of people who say that they're spiritual and not religious. This is the religion of the sovereign citizen movement. This is
right.
This is the religion of some really out there Harry Potter fans. I mean, this is this is a literary kind of magical thinking in that magical that words are magical in and of themselves, where they're constraining the definition of proselytizing specifically to the usage of words.
Right.
That if you're not actually saying directly that I want you to be a Christian, go be a Christian, that somehow magically you're not proselytizing. Much like the sovereign citizen movement thinks that if on a legal paper their last name is in all caps or there's a weird diacritical over something, somehow they haven't evaded their taxes. That worked fantastically for Kent Hovind, and it can work for you too.
It's like putting a thing on your Facebook that says, I do not give Facebook permission right. to use my private permission, to which Facebook says,
yeah, all right. Yeah. Yeah, this is just straight up magical thinking, which should not be surprising from an organization designed to push magical thinking.
Right.
And that's sort of the problem here. And if you want me to actually say religion is bad, you should not be religious. Here's an example where I'd be most likely to do that is that this can lead that religion sometimes leads to this very weak thinking.
Right.
That not only harms other people, but can harm you too. There are other ways around that other than being not religious. That's the evidence for that is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, yeah, they think it's going to work because they have a very specific interpretation of what the rules mean. And this is what I mean with Michael Behe, is that he shrunk and basically in trying to get, saying he was getting sort of a laser point focus on what the meanings of words were, actually changed the definition to mean something else,
mm-hmm.
and then used the power of those definitions to try and change science, which is how you get irreducible complexity.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is straight up like Merlin magical thinking stuff. This is 15th century Italian mysticism writ large.
It kind of is, and in that respect, I actually find it a little bit entertaining.
Oh, I love it.
You know, because you mentioned Harry Potter fans. I'm a little bit of a Harry Potter fan, and one of the things that sort of like the sort of daydreams that I'd go into in my head reading these books is like, you know, in my biology education, I have learned a lot of Latin words and phrases and suffixes and prefixes and things. I think that I would do very well in the Harry Potter universe by just randomly connecting Latin phrases and you know, coming up with new spells or something. And I mean, it's sort of the same kind of thought. It's like, well, if I lived in the magical universe, except that they're skipping the if I lived in the magical universe part, they're just taking these words and phrases and slapping them together into ways that they think will give them power. And the real difference here is I'm a scientist relatively grounded in the real world that I like to think, having a daydream. But for them, this is their life.
Yeah.
It's hard to fathom.
All I can say is, at least LARPers, when they say fireball, will throw a beanbag at you. There's a real effect there.
Right.
Thanks. Yeah, all right.
Fireball, fireball, fireball.
Lightning bolts.
A federal judge has ruled that the Supreme Court ruling that declared same-sex marriage legal doesn't apply to Puerto Rico.
What?
U.S. District Judge Juan M. Perez Jimenez turned down a motion to end the island's same-sex marriage ban, claiming that a direct order from the Puerto Rican government was needed to apply the Obergefell ruling. Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla said that the government would honor the Supreme Court's ruling to issue the marriage certificates to same-sex couples, saying that the district court acted without authority. Representatives for the LGBT groups applauded the governor's stance, but announced that their intention to appeal to put any question about the ban to rest.
How do you get to become a federal judge when your stances are basically this ruling doesn't apply to us because la 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 la.
I assume it's the way a lot of people take their driver's exam.
Mm.
Just it's a lot more detailed where they learn the rules just long enough to pass the exam and then just go whatever.
Yeah. Well, but then getting promoted to federal judge, I mean.
That. Oh, come on. That's political.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
true.
It's not like political in Democrat Republican, but there's nepotism and there's politicking that, and there's, you know, that's still involved.
That's true.
Yeah. So this guy is good at pouring brandy, but maybe not so great at the thinking. Yeah. Or I guess it would be rum because it's Puerto Rico, right?
He knows how to buy a case of Johnny Walker Red.
That would be a thing, yes.
Well, no, and this is not the first time that Judge Perez Jimenez has been in the news. A couple of years ago, he was actually placed with another challenge to the gay marriage ban in Puerto Rico, and he basically ruled that the ban was acceptable because of the precedent of Baker v. Nelson. Now, this is fascinating because Baker v. Nelson was a case in 1972 where the state of Minnesota basically said that same-sex couples had no right to legal marriage.
Right.
And the Supreme Court refused to hear the case, and that set a Supreme Court precedent. Basically, they accepted the lower court's ruling.
Okay.
Now, that was 1972. We've had the Windsor case since then. We've had Lawrence v. Texas since then. We've had the Obergefell ruling since then. And all three of those overturned that precedent. But Perez Jimenez basically said, yeah, all those things that overturned, he even admitted in his ruling that these cases overturned that old ruling. But I like the old ruling better, so I'm going to use that as my precedent to rule that this law is constitutional.
Right.
Which is weird. Like, that's not how the law works.
Yeah, give me a hamburger and cock robin.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, I mean, people were able to buy hamburgers from there before, even though it's been closed for like 20 years. So go get me a hamburger.
Oh.
Can I, as a judge, can I give a ruling based on the Dred Scott ruling?
Probably not.
Can I give a ruling based on the
wow, you got depressing.
Yeah. Well, what was not Board Brown versus Board of Education, but the one that overturned, what was that case, the original separate but equal case?
You're the guy who does the writing.
I just thought
put
about
him on
like,
the spot.
If I'd come up with this a while ago, I probably would have looked it up. But no, it's like Brown versus Board of Education overturned the statute of separate but equal, which was right. Upheld in the late 1800s.
Right.
So you can't give a ruling now saying, well, there's precedent for separate but equal in the 1800s. We're going to use that because that has been overturned.
Well, yeah, it's I'm going to ignore law. I mean, because we also have to, if this guy can keep getting stuff, how does Roy Moore keep getting to the Alabama Supreme Court? Because he gets elected. When it comes to federal or when it comes to like higher end courts, politics are involved, whether they're actual partisan politics or it's just the straight up normal boring kind of politics, and it's terrifying in both ways.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on and say Roy Moore should be disbarred.
Strangely enough, he has been.
He has been.
I'm pretty sure twice.
Brown versus Board of Education overturned Plessy v. Ferguson, 1896, talking about separate rail cars.
Thank you. I very much appreciate you, Becky. Hey,
somehow.
Becky.
How the hell did that happen?
I apparated.
You apparated?
Yeah. It's a Harry Potter spell.
You're a big-time apparator. Apparating through the wind.
Smooth apparator.
So I plugged your new project. Plugged Dan's new child-scaring thing. And
horse clans.
His new science education job. Come on. Can I have a little fun? No, I can't. But I got a thing happening, and I should probably plug that, too, while we're plugging things. Support the spirit of E Pluribus Unum and the separation of church and state at a June 29th rally at Olympia's East Plaza North Lawn by the steps at 11 a.m. Positive signage welcome. While we are there, the Reverend Franklin Graham will be having his Decision America Tour rally on the Capitol steps less than a mile away. We will be there to show our support for the principles our nation was founded upon. I will be speaking as well as many other good speakers. It's a political rally, tying back into what we were talking about before.
Right.
Should be a lot of fun. Becky, this is I don't know if we're being racist or not by having you on for this story, but I know you wanted to do this story. A major raid by the FBI was conducted on a number of yeshivas and contractors in New York. Over 300 agents served 22 search warrants for the Ramapo area to search for evidence of fraud. The yeshivas allegedly collected millions of dollars from the government's E-rate program. The program is designed to give grants to schools to spend on tech infrastructure, such as wiring and servers. According to a report from the newspaper Jewish Week, Orthodox schools were taking government grants for computers, but were prohibiting students from using the internet. A statement released by the U.S. Attorney's Office said that the raid was part of an ongoing investigation, and any charges filed will become public. Because they kind of have to, right?
Yeah.
That's how that works?
Okay, so as the writer of this blurb, I would try to clarify, I had limited space here.
Sure, sure.
But the U.S. Attorney General's office has not announced exactly what this raid is about. Everyone thinks it's about the story that came out a couple years ago from the Jewish Voice newspaper, Jewish Week, my apologies, saying that there was this E-rate program, they're taking money, and then not letting the kids use the thing the money
is designed for,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it may be something else, and if it is something else, then they will tell us when charges are brought. But we think it's this. So,
this is also the area where about 50% of the town is Orthodox Jewish.
I know we've covered this before.
And this is ultra Orthodox. And you know, there's all sorts of programs to have tax write-offs for private schools, to have government programs to try and get, you know, internet access and tech infrastructure, as you know, you said in the story. But here's the thing. When your doctrine dictates that children cannot and should not be exposed to things on the internet, we're talking a little bit more strict than just the firewalls at the regular public school that, you know, occasionally gets annoying because you can't, you know, research the American Cancer Society because the word breast is blocked, right? Lest any 11th grader encounter a website that contains the word breast, right? We're a little bit beyond that.
Yeah.
We're not going to let anyone use the internet because there's things that will bring you to the other side. And in Orthodox Judaism, it's particularly funny because they use the word the dark side.
What?
So it's the way of darkness.
Don't just say, yeah, give me an example.
You're putting me on the spot and I cannot think of the word in Hebrew that it is, but it's...
Promise me we can talk about this some other time? Because
yes.
I'd love to...
Yes, I think so.
Because I see infinite opportunity for puns.
I believe the translation is, you will never understand the power of the dark side. I think that's kind of how it goes.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
I like that.
I need like a voice modulator to kind of like...
Well, this is a town that tries to be, if I remember right from the last time we talked about this town, it's a town that tries to be incredibly insular, tries to be completely dominated by this one Orthodox Jewish sect, and believes that educating its students for the wider world takes away from the study and worship of their magical mystery book.
I think you really hit that nail on the head, Sam. I mean, you also have incidents in this town of Orthodox Jews bullying people to sell their houses, you know, going door to door and say, and when you kind of think about it, why are there so many people concentrated in one area? Well, it has to do with the ultra-Orthodox practice of the Sabbath, because you cannot use anything that is electrical on the Sabbath. And so in order to attend synagogue on the Sabbath, you have to be within walking distance. So it's no surprise that you have Orthodox Jewish communities that are clustered together, centered around one synagogue.
Well, don't they sometimes have to wrap their neighborhoods in a wire to consider it one structure? I remember that cheap hack.
Yes, yeah. That's another fun one. So another prohibition on the Sabbath is carrying things outside your home. So if you just make your entire neighborhood your home domicile, then you can carry things just fine. Like, oh, I don't know, the baby in the baby car seat, right?
But you can't start the car.
You can't start the car. No, and the baby in the baby carrier or something like that. So you can do that. But to say, you know, this is a growing community. I mean, Orthodox Jewish sects do not, you know, favor birth control. And you have many families that have, you know, 8-10 children. And so these are growing families and they're wanting to have more people, you know, within their particular community. So they're going to need growth space. They're going to need other houses that are within walking distance to the shul, to the synagogue. Yeah. And so there have been incidents of people going door to door and saying, no, please, you know, sell your house to these people. And there's a lot of tension between the non-Jewish folks in the town and the Orthodox.
So I want to talk about the cheap hack a little bit, because I use that phrase kind of intentionally. And that's something that, Becky, you taught me out pretty early in our relationship about sort of the ideological tricks that would be played in order to stick to the letter of the law.
Oh, it's hilarious lawyering that goes on.
But I find it interesting that they'll wrap a town in a wire to make it one structure so that you can sleep on the green power transformer and it's still your house. That's just sorry, that's just me. So they can carry stuff around. But they can't do similar legal trickery to let human beings have access to information via the internet?
Well, it's because the information would be too damaging, would be too
because it would be very hard to socially control an isolated population of people if they had access to outside ideas.
Exactly.
And on that happy note, I think that's all the time we got today, because I got to do the production for the radio show. This has been a lot of fun. It's been a very fun weekend, and I don't think it's over yet. We got Poe Show. We're going to be at the Ale House this week, correct?
Yes, that's
all right.
All right,
absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Dave Brulette. Thank you, Dan Lombardo. Happy birthday, Becky.
Thanks, Sam.
See you guys next week.
So, Caroline.